Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Score! Alex Ovechkin still going strong, overpowering at 600. Score! Backstrom has tied it. Totally fired. Rebound, doorstep. It's in!
Save, baby! Washington Capitals are the 2018 Stanley Cup champions.
Hello again, Caps fans. After a nice vacation, we are back at it on the Caps Talk podcast. I'm Rob Carlin, here with Ryan Billy and Brian McNally, as we jump into really, truly the dog days of summer now. Because, McNally, we were joking before we came on here. I did the hockey thing. I went to a lake house in Michigan, and I spend time in a lake. That is a hockey off season, and you're seeing all the pictures of all the hockey people on their lakes right now, laying out and relaxing. So this is the time where even now, like the Ryan DeZingles, the kind of B-list guys are starting to sign. These are the dog days. Not much is happening
there's
now.
The shelves are bare in the free agent grocery store. It's getting a little bit ugly. You're taking chances on guys now. You're just like, oh, man, maybe this guy can help us. But really, there's not much going on. We got to get through. I see your countdown every day on Twitter. It's a little depressing, to be honest, because it's like Dmitry Orlov's number. It's like 81
the
days.
The old Dmitry Orlov number.
Right. It's like 81 days until, or what are we down to, 79?
79, yes. Right. At the time of recording, yes, today was the Nathan Walker, honor of Nathan Walker.
Who's 78?
There's only one.
Lewington. Yeah, right.
It's the only, as per Hockey Reference, the bigger question is, who do you choose for 77?
Do you go the obvious?
There's his last name begins with O.
Yeah.
I go Oshie.
I think it's got to be Oshie.
Not Oates.
Not the other
guy. I don't think Caps fans would be happy with you if you put an Adam Oates picture up.
But there's also one other 77. Do you know who it is? Predates my time here, but not by much.
Was it Baranov?
No, or was it
a Russian defenseman?
I don't know.
No, I think he was a pretty big fan favorite.
So between Oates and
like fan favorite, like you know, not like Ovi Oshie fan favorite, but a guy. Joe Corvo.
Is it Joe Corvo?
Joe Corvo, yes.
Oh man,
Joe Corvo. I don't know if he was a.
I always thought, predated me, so I don't remember.
No, I wasn't here. Joe Corvo's the opposite. Joe Corvo, there's a segment of the Caps population that would punch you in the face.
Okay.
When you said fan favorite, that took me in a different direction.
Because he was a deadline acquisition.
Yeah.
Maybe, you can make an argument he's the worst deadline acquisition.
Is that like the Scott Walker?
I think it was a little before. I think Joe Corvo's in the 9-10 era. Okay.
2010 is when he was here, yeah.
But okay. I don't know that he even played in the playoffs, or if he did, he was like, he did not work out.
Yeah. Okay. Joe Corvo's out.
But not only did he not work out, he was somewhat petulant about it. Like, okay. He's kind of an ass about it, too. So I don't know.
Okay, Corvo's out.
Okay.
Corvo's out.
So the answer is we will not be using Joe Corvo.
No. So it becomes Oates or Oshie. I mean, Oshie's the obvious one.
I think Oshie's the obvious one. Just, you know, there's enough.
When in doubt, pick TJ Oshie.
Yeah. Which, by the way, we're going to get to the mailbag because this is the mailbag edition. Figured this is a good time to take questions. And a bunch of people on my Twitter account sent in some pretty good questions. I know, McNally, you got some, too. But first, while we're talking about TJ Oshie, great job by whoever was here getting Oshie from the Accenture golf tournament, where he said on camera that progressing well, close to 100%, should be ready for training camp.
Yeah.
Hockey Jenks, I know they had the Daily Line radio show is out there. Hockey Jenks breaking some news while he was out there as well. So there's one thing when he says on camera, I'm near 100% and I should be ready. Then there's a whole other thing, the fact that he's playing golf. He's taking jump shots on that little rim they had set up there. Yeah. And then does the shirt over the head, drinking beer.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about
it. I feel like he's ready, right? Yeah, I think that's pretty much.
You got another month of healing, like, and then training camp isn't even until mid-September. Like, I think he's good. Maybe they take it easy with him early, but that guy will be fine. As long as his training is ramped up the next couple weeks, he's in good shape.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like I said, I think that was Friday, last Friday.
The interview was on Friday afternoon.
Yeah. Right. So I said, this doesn't ease Caps fans going into the weekend. Nothing.
To me, the fact that he was even there playing golf.
Right.
To me, I was like, oh, well.
That much swinging of the shoulder.
Must be feeling pretty good if we're out there knocking around in Tahoe. The jump shot was impressive.
Yeah, it was.
That to me.
I feel like Oshie's that dude, right? Like
all athletes are those. Like
not all athletes, because they're like certain hockey players can't throw a baseball.
Ovi goes out and hits a hole in one like the first time he plays.
But like Ovi can't throw a ball. Like you know we've seen him throw for like
baseball flummoxes many other players
and all. But like TJ Oshie, I feel like when I saw A Star Is Born with Bradley Cooper. I remember when he started singing.
I heard the movie was hysterical.
It was a laugh riot. But I remember when he started singing, I was like, oh, you. Are you serious, man? You're that good looking. You're an Academy Award actor.
Yeah.
And now you sing like a rock star? Like,
yeah.
But I feel like TJ Oshie, you're like, cool, fun, great hockey player, sweet jump shot, great golfer. Like, he's just that
Animal
dude.
Animal
like,
lacrosse stick. He'd probably be just dodging people.
Probably a doctor. We don't even know.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. He's just that dude, but that was great news seeing TJ Oshie, you know, moving around healthy. It looks like he'll be ready to go. Other hockey news, like we said, the Ryan Dzingel, the only thing that interests me about Dzingel signing with Carolina is, look, you know, you now have to keep up with the rest of the Metro. I mean, every team seems to be getting better or making moves, and Carolina loses Ferland. They re-sign Aho, but, you know, for Carolina, they don't want to lose any momentum, and I like Dzingel. I think he's a better player than what we saw in Columbus. I think he's closer to the Ottawa player. I think he just got kind of lost in a crazy all chips in.
Definitely wasn't an impact player at all the way Duchesne was, right?
Right.
But it concerns me that an Ohio State guy is playing for Columbus, and Columbus was like, "Nah, we're good, man."
Right.
It's not like his contract was crazy. I mean, Carolina kind of got him at I guess what you would call a bargain, right? That's weird that essentially his hometown team was like, we're good. It's not like they don't need help too, and they didn't want him around. So that
is a little weird. I mean, that would be somewhat,
right. That's a natural.
They're
going to
be building.
Columbus.
That's a guy you'd probably try to see a part of.
One other thing about that too, though, is what does that mean for Justin Williams? Because they do have the cap room. The Canes have plenty of room. But they got a lot of forwards now, and Justin Williams is still contemplating retirement,
right?
He's still kind of undecided. It sounded like he was coming back. And you can't say he's not a key player for them. He had another amazing year at his age. So we'll see.
One other move, I think since we did our big free agency extravaganza, me and McNally, right before I went on vacation, the Nazem Kadri trade from Toronto to Colorado.
Yeah.
And look, you know, Toronto's loaded, but the defense was the question. They get back Tyson Barry. I mean, I think Toronto, I love that move kind of for both teams because Colorado needed some sort of semblance
structure
of a team other than the top line.
Yep.
But I love that move for Toronto.
I think it's great for Toronto, it's good for both teams, right? You need that. I think Colorado needed a little bit of bite, which is interesting because Eric Duhacik from The Athletic wrote this story about the Calgary-Colorado series where Calgary was the team that really needed that kind of edge, that they were a little bit soft in that series, maybe needed a player like Kadri, who they then identified, who they then tried to get, and he was like, nah, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, did you hear about this?
No.
So he read it.
He nixed the deal?
We read it
kind of separate places, but I read it from in The Athletic.
I heard it on the 31 Thoughts podcast.
With Elliot Friedman.
Yeah.
Duhacik, what he said was, okay, Kadri was like, no, I don't want to go to Colorado. I'm not going there.
No, Calgary.
Calgary, I'm sorry.
Right.
And
because he had no move clause.
He had a no move clause. And Toronto, he thought that meant I'm good. I stayed this off. I want to stay in Toronto.
He wanted to stay in Toronto. So he said, I'm going to make this tough. And I turned it down. I wanted to let everyone know I want to be in Toronto.
How'd that work out for him?
And they're like, okay. But they got a better deal out of it.
So Toronto gets a better deal out of it, and
we don't know what the deal was for Calgary, right? We don't know who Calgary would have sent
true.
Over.
I thought it was Brody.
I
think he said, now that could be informed speculation, but the guy is a Calgary, lives in Calgary.
Right.
So I trust that. So if it was TJ Bro, I mean, I think Toronto got a better player out of it.
Right? I agree.
And then Kadri goes to a team that now already beat Calgary and now is a tougher team to play against. Plus added Burakovsky for scoring depth and all that stuff. So the Avalanche may be...
good for a long time.
We've been talking
too.
About like they're like the Oilers in a way, like, oh yeah, they'll be good at some point when all these draft picks, but no, they're
really good now.
They yeah. should be. They
and
should.
MacKinnon is the best contract in hockey.
Best contract lets them do other things for a couple of years.
Right.
I mean, that's
a Kadri Tkachuk matchup. I like that.
Yeah, I like that rival. That could
I
be
like
a,
that rivalry. That could be a thing.
Western Conference.
I'm actually interesting. Gonna miss Kadri. I don't know, he's not a divisional guy here, but he's a sneaky, big-time jerk face.
I don't think it's sneaky. Yeah. I think he's like, I'm a big-time jerk face.
That goes to Marshawn, which is entirely deserved. Kadri, like I said, we don't get to see him as much. But, man, he gets under your skin. And
I like him a lot.
And he's done things, you know, against
but getting himself suspended like that, that's where you're like, dude,
no,
you can't do
yeah,
that.
You can't do that.
But I like him, Marshawn,
I'd say,
I hate.
Kadri is interesting theater, one yes. way or the other. So I'm going to miss that a little
Marshand,
bit.
It feels like a bit. Like he's playing a wrestling character.
Right.
Kadri just feels like
this
guy's
is.
Just kind of a jackass.
Right,
like,
he's
just that guy that's going to take shots at people and be sneaky dirty and all that stuff. But also a guy you want on your team who can play hard minutes and, you know, good trade for both teams, I think.
All right, again, we're going to get to the mailbag here in just a second. But, Billy, you brought up something. Did this come out today, odds?
I saw it today. I think it
Was today because I saw everybody was tweeting out
yeah.
odds.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so, again, we're taping this on Monday the 15th. So this came out today. The odds, is this the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, they divided it by conference here. So Tampa, 4-1 favorite. That's no surprise. Hysterical, but no surprise. I mean, hysterical in that.
How many times can we go to the well?
Right, seriously. Boston, the 7-1 favorite, no surprise. What I thought was interesting were the next two teams, Toronto, a 7-1 favorite, and Florida, a 9-1 favorite, before you get to the Pens and Capitals, 10-1 favorites. And honestly, the way the Pittsburgh's offseason has gone,
yeah,
I'm shocked that the Capitals and Penguins have the same.
As much as Caps fans will hate this, no one's ever going to sleep on Crosby and Malkin.
100%. I still think they make the playoffs, and once that happens, you never know. So I am not riding the Pittsburgh's dead train by any stretch, even though they lose Kessel or whatever. They still will be in the mix. I hope they're not. But they will be, because that's just what they do.
I'm with you, though. I look at their offseason, and I'm just like, well,
what's happening?
I don't love their back end. Like, they have terrible contracts all over the roster. They signed Tanev, and okay, he's
forever.
They signed him forever. It's
right.
Like, what?
So, look, right. So you look at two teams. One got swept in the first round, one that lost in double overtime in the first round in game seven in the Caps. Caps definitely lost some players for sure, but I think we all feel pretty good about the guys that they're going to replace them with a couple of question marks.
They didn't give up Phil Kessel.
You look at Pittsburgh, they lose Phil Kessel. Tanev is a weird, you know, this is a team that
love the player, don't like the length of the contract.
Yeah, but a team that got their butts kicked by the Islanders and really didn't get markedly better. It's just weird to me.
It's Crosby and Malkin. Until someone knocks them out.
Yeah, I hear you.
So, okay, so they're what?
So Toronto, so 10-1.
10-1.
But it's interesting after that, and it's funny, if you had listed these teams before free agency, your draw would have dropped. The Devils at 12-1 right after that. The Devils. Then the Islanders and Rangers, all 12-1.
Hughes and Subban.
Metro, yeah, so the New York metro area, all three teams, 12-1 to win the Cup next year.
Feels a little bit.
It's almost too.
I don't see how the Islanders are in that.
The Flyers are 14-1.
Next,
yeah, better than Carolina's chances.
So read the Carolina chances because that
20-1.
Oh, that's totally suspect to me.
So how many teams are ahead of Carolina?
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
10 teams ahead of Carolina.
I was
never a Carolina believer. The last two or three years, when they were the it team, I was like, nope, I don't believe it.
Right.
I don't think they're tough enough. I don't think they're good enough.
Oh,
their goalies are good enough. And then finally this year they break through. Obviously we saw how good they're, but I'm not comparing their story to the Blues story, because I think the Blues are being disrespected as being like, yeah. I don't think anyone's saying like, whoa, everyone's chasing the Blues now. I think a lot of people were like, they just went on a magical run.
One of those years where it was like, oh, good for the Blues. And but next year they'll be in the mix with.
I don't think Carolina is sustainable. I don't think they're going to be great for a long time.
I don't know if they're going to be great for a long time, but I think their coaching's really good. Mm-hmm. I think they have enough players that they're in the conversation. I definitely think based on last year.
But if the Caps get a fluky goal in the first overtime and they're out in the first round, you know, like, are you saying, like, no. Whoa, look at this Carolina team?
I guess.
Well, kind of, though, because of the year they had.
Yeah, I still think they had great.
Now, if you want to, their goaltending, because they re-sign Mrazek, right? That could go either way. Like, if you told me he was terrible next year, I'd be like, okay, we're back to the regular Carolina where they have no goaltending.
Right.
But the
level. Aho's coming back after having signed an offer sheet wanting to go to Montreal. So you're telling your club and your team.
I thought he said he did want to go. I thought he said.
You sign an offer sheet.
It's awkward.
It's awkward as hell. You're betting on yourself, right? You're saying, I'm going to sign. You're forcing them to give you that money.
Maybe.
It's a little awkward to walk back in that room and be like.
Awkward after signing an offer sheet and being like, I'm ready to go to Montreal. And then Montreal, Bergevin, the GM, was like, yeah, he wanted to be here. We did everything we could to get him here. He wanted to be here. I mean, he's put pressure on. This is interesting. I'm not a huge Carolina.
Yeah.
They were great against the Caps. That building was incredible.
Yeah, it was great.
I'm just not all in on Carolina.
My problem isn't if you put them ahead of the Caps or Penguins. My problem is
putting them behind the other Devils,
the other Rangers, four. And like, you don't think they're better than all four?
And the Flyers,
And the Flyers, like, and the odds are 14
the
to 1.
I mean, I agree with. Yes.
But even the Islanders and the
Islanders and Flyers, I put behind them.
Behind them, okay. But the Rangers, we haven't. Like, can we wait till the Rangers play a game with this lineup? Like, I get it. They improved for sure. Don't get me wrong. But they stunk last year.
Right.
They traded Zuccarello. I mean, it's not like they're a finished product to me.
No.
And even some of the guys they brought in, like Trouba's reputation took a little bit of a hit. I don't think anyone thinks is he a 1A? Is he John Carlson? No, I don't think he's that good, right?
Nope.
Is he PK Subban? Maybe. Maybe he's that kind of.
Panarin will be great for him.
Panarin's great.
But we've seen.
Kako, I think, is going to be really good.
I do too, but we've seen that team flame out with a lot of talent.
Yeah.
My mind, Carolina is better than those teams.
And honestly, that head coach, is it Quinn?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
College coaches.
College coach. He could be a little in over his head.
Didn't
in terms
work out
of,
for the Flyers.
No, it didn't. Now there's expectations.
You know, right.
Yeah.
He kind of had the luxury of knowing, well, this team's not going to be great.
Yeah.
Now there's going to be expectations. I'll be curious.
But it does show that the Metro is going to be a bitch.
That's going to be awesome.
But is it? Are they getting four playoff teams? I mean, look at the other division now. They're almost guaranteed. They're guaranteed the three, and then Florida.
Right.
So, and Montreal was in the mix all last year. Obviously, Detroit, Ottawa are different.
I'm not saying they're better. Per se, but the fight will be better.
The fight.
So you know those three are getting in the Atlantic, right?
Yeah,
and then Florida will make a run. But if you tell me right now, who of Caps we feel pretty good about? Pittsburgh, Rangers, Devils, Islanders, Carolina.
Can almost make a case for
any of right. So I'm saying it's going to be just a slog to see who gets out of.
Might be one of those years where like 100 points wins the division, right?
Right.
Because you can't count on. Even Columbus, we're going to kill Columbus and say they lost everything and all that stuff.
They're still pretty good.
Yes, I mean, the blue line, Jones, and the young talent they have. I don't know. It doesn't feel like a last place team to me. It feels like a team that will be still difficult to play against.
And they're, speaking of coaching, their coach is always going to have them ready. Their coach can always have them
ready. So the Metro is fascinating. And then you talk about, will the Penguins slip? Will the Caps slip, just given age and all that stuff. I don't think they will yet, but you can't count it out either.
All right, so let's get to the mailbag now. And the mailbag in 2019 is questions on Twitter. So I put out, if anyone has any questions about the Caps, some really good questions came in here. I'll go through a couple. Ted Bridge tweets in two questions. Let's answer them one at a time. If Juice asks for $1 million in arbitration and gets it, will the Caps part ways with him?
$1 million. Yeah, probably. That makes it that he only made $650 last year.
Right. That, and what was the QO?
The QO should have been $715. $715. So if he's getting $1 million.
Yeah.
We're thinking in terms of Jake Varana here because he's going to be somewhere in the $3 to $4 million range. I think the comps that I looked at, the Maple Leafs RFAs were perfect comps for him. Kapanen was a perfect comp, 3.25. But that doesn't leave $1 million for Christian Juice. So, I mean, do you want to walk away from that? Probably not. But
the one thing they do have is young left-handed defensemen in their system.
Right. Siegenthaler will be there at a cheaper price.
And then you start going into
Then you go into the Lucas Johanssons,
the Johanssons, right. What's the other kid?
Furuvari.
Furuvari, right. So I don't know. They're bigger.
They're
stronger.
Yeah. I wouldn't say Christian Juice is in a position of leverage there.
I think this is his representative taking a bit of a Hail Mary shot here.
Hopefully, I agree.
We get it, but you could put yourself in a bad spot. You could get your money and lose the war.
Yeah.
And be on, be out. But I don't anticipate that. He played because of the injury last year, split time, all that stuff, right? The year before he played.
And then Siegenthaler passed him.
Yeah.
I would like to, in a perfect world, you get to see Christian Juice healthy for a full 82.
For a full year. Yeah.
Right.
I think that's true.
I think you'd like to see that because I don't think he was great last year. I don't think anybody thought he was particularly good last year. But I also think the injury was a big issue.
And totally.
Obviously.
But then Siegenthaler passed him.
Right. But he'd
already be on Siegenthaler to keep it now.
Yeah, for sure. But, again, Christian Juice was, won a Stanley Cup and played in that.
And played well.
And,
question two from Ted Bridge. Could you see, and we've talked about this, could you see Oshie eventually ending up on the third line this season? It would save some wear and tear on his body and bring some offensive punch to that line. I think that the wear and tear part,
I think we've anyone would sign that. Up for that.
Right.
I don't think we talked about at the beginning with Oshie and how they're going to handle him in preseason and camp. And I would baby gloves him, there's no pitch count in hockey, but if there was, he'd get it. Because I think he's way too valuable, and we saw that at the end of last year.
It's just who becomes the second line or the
You're picking Ponick or moving Hagelin over. I don't know that that's – this is the one area where the Caps are a little bit hamstrung compared to last year because last year you could always turn to Andre Burakovsky, and he could play both sides. And once you got Hagelin, you had a ton of guys who you could mix and match. The depth of doing that is kind of gone. So – yes, you can drop Oshie. It's not ideal to me now with the way this roster is constructed. No one on the fourth line can bump up do anything like that.
I think at times you can do it. If Oshie goes down for a game and you bring him back and put him on the third line and stick Hagelin up there for a stretch, a game or two, whatever, if you want to restrict it. But I agree. I don't think there's like a clear path to Oshie spending a lot of time on the third line if you're sort of transitioning him to the third line.
My other question, too, is what are we talking about here? Because if we're talking about a minutes thing, I don't think that's the issue.
Whatever minutes he's on, he's going 150%.
That's the issue. And not the hustle, not the effort, but he puts himself in some tough positions sometimes where, we always go, oh, my God, he was so, because crashing into a board, and you're like, one inch the other way, and that's a problem. He plays the game the way it should be played. He plays the game 150%, which is great. But eventually that catches up to you. Yeah. So I don't know if monitoring his minutes, saying, well, if he plays 18 minutes instead of 20 is the right way to go, or 17 instead of 19, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's necessarily saving him. He didn't miss the playoffs last year because he was tired. He missed them because he got cheap. He got a cheap shot. But the point is he's a physical player who plays physically, and that's redundant, but I'm going to say it anyway. but I think that's where he needs to maybe sort of dial it back, at least on that part of it.
He can't.
And I don't know if he can.
Because he hasn't played the game on the edge. Like, Tom Wilson had to change his game a little bit, because if not, he's going to...
It's instinct to dive after that puck. Like, that's what he's done since he was 8 years old. So I get it. I just wish sometimes... again... the countless times last year where it was that close right. to, and you're like, holy hell, like that was so close to being.
Or there were times where it happened and you're like, oh God, oh she.
Right.
And then he was back out on his next shift. And you're just like,
but that piles up.
For sure.
And especially when you get plus 30, you're 30, 31, 32, then you start going,
body starts hurting a little bit more.
Body starts hurting. Right. And having said all
I'm
that.
I'm sorry, if you're 30 plus, 31, 32, and you're not Ovi.
And you're not Ovi.
Right. Because Ovi's, apparently, again, not just, fully like human. Right.
Russian machine never breaks.
Right. This is a question from MS Epper 1. This question, I was actually thinking about this the other day. Exactly for this reason. John Carlson has never been a big emotions guy to me, but without Orpik and Niskanen gone, he will no doubt be the captain of the defense. Do you think he can take on that role well? And that was, it was more so in the leadership in the room role, because they lost a ton of leadership in the room, Niskanen and Orpik. And, you know, I started to think, look, they have Tom Wilson, who's great. They have TJ Oshie, who's great. Ovi and Backstrom will continue to be Ovi and Backstrom, but there is going to be like a little void of where do you go? Orpik, while not a great talker on camera, was always great. If you wanted to learn something, ask a question that you can use for knowledge somewhere else, he was great at that. And Niskanen was obviously the open book when you talk to him on camera or off camera. And I think Carlson doesn't love it, but I think he will rise to the occasion if needed, because it is now more so going to be asked of him that it can't just be on
Wilson. I'd be a little worried, though. I mean, because you can't really change who guys are. And that's not to say, like, John Carlson's play speaks for itself, right? He's been one of the best defensemen in the league for how many years now? And obviously getting Norris Trophy votes every year, maybe top five, top three, whatever it is, the last couple of years. So that's not the issue. The issue is if you're saying, can he be Brooks Orpik behind the scenes? I don't know. I don't know if that's his.
I guess I was talking more about the answering the questions, the being there when the game is over.
I think he can do that. I mean, John Carlson he's Ryan Zimmerman, right? Ryan Zimmerman, quiet guy, doesn't get too fired up, you know. And has been that way his whole career. And he's been the face of that franchise for a long time, even with Bryce being here when he was.
Long as Ovi has.
Right. Like Zim has been here forever.
Yeah.
And I he's one of my favorite DC athletes. I think he's been great.
Me too.
And I've enjoyed Ryan Zimmerman since he got here. But Ryan always answered the questions. He always talked to the media when other guys in that clubhouse did not.
He has. He had a unique ability, too, to like when questions were awkward or, you know, things weren't going well, Ryan can answer those questions without getting defensive about
it. I've asked those awkward questions.
Yeah.
The 2 years I covered that team was 59 wins, 59 wins. I mean, it's...
It was brutal.
It was brutal, and it was hard to go into that room, and you're like, who do we talk to here? Like, my God, like, what do I do? And he was always there to do it, and it was... that's why I think one of the things that has endeared me to him. But going back to Carlson, I think... he doesn't have to change his personality. I don't think Carlson has ever been bad with the media. I don't think he's ever. I think he'll be a little bit busier. I think
that's
I think I don't think having to talk with the media more. I don't think having to assume a couple more leadership style roles within, especially among the defensemen, that maybe Brooks Orpik and Matt Niskanen filled. Again, Niskanen, we always joked, was the guy who would come out first after a loss to talk. I don't know if I expect that. Maybe from Carlson. I don't know if he takes that mantle, but I don't think it's going to be too much. He's been here long enough to know the deal and understand it.
I'm intrigued how that will work. Because then you look at the guys around him. It's a couple, you know, Michael Kempney's English isn't great. Radko Gudas, it's a little more of a diverse. Nick Jensen has never been in that role, you know, to have to answer those kind of questions. So really,
Dmitry Orlov, baby.
Dmitry Orlov. So it becomes kind of, at least on the blue line, it definitely becomes Carlson's show. You're not going to really go, we're talking from a media perspective, but you're not really going to go to those other guys to find out, hey, what's up? What's going on? Orlov's good. Like, you can talk to them, but again, when English isn't your first language and you're worried about subtlety and nuance, like, that's going to fall on John Carlson, at least among the blue liners. In terms of overall leadership, I think they have plenty. I mean, Backstrom, Ovechkin, Wilson,
100%.
Oshie, all these guys are Eller. I mean, you got guys who will hold people accountable. So I think you're
leadership
you're
out of the yin yang on this team.
Another question here. This is from Lisa Marie. And again, an interesting question that we probably talked about throughout the season. I think we as fans don't have much insight into what a head coach really does. Still, my sense is Todd Reardon's first year was a bit of a learning curve. What would you like to see TR do differently this year? And I think it is. No matter how much any assistant coach is prepped and, you know, being led down a road, they knew this was going to be the eventual taking over. He's studied. He asked other coaches for advice. He asked other coaches for advice how to take over a championship team. He talked about all those things. But I don't think any coach is prepared for the amount of stuff that comes with being a head coach. They all know how to coach hockey. They all know how to get on the ice and run drills.
Yep.
They all know how to evaluate players and talk to players. Some are better at it. Some are worse at it. But I don't think any head coach is really prepared for just the everyday answering questions, interviews, worrying about every injury, dealing with your assistant coaches now from a different point of view, having to deal with the mood of the room every day where you're not the guy who, hey, when Barry Trotz said, hey, Todd, I need you to go smooth things over, be the go-between. When you're that guy, you have to sort of learn that on the fly, and then you throw in the level of expectation of taking over a Stanley Cup team.
Yeah.
I think for sure, I think he did a good job this year. I think he managed the whatever happened leading into the bye week and the All-Star break when the team just kind of hit a wall and he knew it while we were all freaking out and fans were screaming for him to be fired. He had a plan of managing getting to the finish line and then hitting the reset, and it worked. But I think for sure, it was a learning curve. I'd rather ask Allen or Locker what you want to see differently from him.
Sure.
But I definitely think that it was a learning curve.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of X's and O's and like that kind of stuff, we're not going to be qualified to like say, hey, he's got to do this better. That you know, they have to do this. What you take your cues from are the players. Did the players think he did a good job? And I think even the players would say there was a learning curve involved there. That, look, Barry Trotz had done this for 20 years, right? He wasn't going to do everything perfectly, but he probably always had a frame of reference to go back as a head coach and say, I went through this in 03 in Nashville, or, you know, 05 in Nashville, or I remember we kind of had an issue like this in 15 with this team. You know, Todd doesn't have that fallback. He had to learn on the job a little bit. And, you know, maybe some of that came out in the playoffs, right? Playoffs are a different thing when you're running a bench. There's a little bit of, you know, when they had to fix the blue line the year before, that was his job, right? It was his job to get that done. He's got to delegate that a little bit more. And that, I think there's a learning curve, right, Ryan, in terms of figuring out how to balance all of that.
100%. I would be curious if he was in the room, I'd ask him, what was the biggest surprise? Because even though he was a first-time head coach, he's been around for a long time. He was under Barry for how many years and was in Pittsburgh before that. I mean, he's not a neo. It's not like he was a college coach coming up to the NHL,
sure,
right? Different scenario for him. So I think there was a lot of it. I thought he did a really good job this year.
I agree.
I thought he did really well. I think, I think, not that he walked in knowing it all. You don't know it all. I'm sure he didn't assume that he knew it all. But I would say that he probably thought, given his experience, he was in a pretty unique position and in good shape to take over a team that had those expectations, that had won a Stanley Cup. So I'd be curious to know what there had to have been surprises along the way, things that he didn't realize would maybe take up as much time as they did, that he maybe didn't think would be deserving of as much attention, things like that. Like you said, no, he's got to be the one who deals with the media. He can't, you know, assistant coaches, once the game is over, can go there.
Bye-bye. Right.
Some of those things. And I think a good barometer of what kind of head coach he is what will happen this season. What he learned from this first season, what he took away. Because like what you said, the hockey's the hockey. We know he's a good hockey coach. We know he can coach hockey. That part of it, I think, isn't the issue. I would like to see a little less slingshot. But other than that, you know.
But managing personalities becomes the thing, right? Like, you have to, guys have to believe in you. Or when Barry rips the team the November before last and says, you know, essentially, like, let's get in gear here. Let's go. Do you have the gravitas to walk in that room and
snap.
Command that, to snap and command that respect? Some, you can rely on your leadership group, and to a certain extent, this team probably does run on somewhat of an autopilot because they've won for a decade, and because you have guys who played at a high level at every, you know, the Ovechkins, the Oshie, all the Backstrom, all these guys. So you have a built-in system, but at some point, even the best teams run up against each other. Personalities clash. Guys get frustrated with each other. How do you manage that?
Even with the most veteran team, say the Patriots or whatever team you want to come up with, there's no way there hasn't been a moment in any of their seasons where a head coach had to do something extraordinary, where a head coach had to be a good head coach, a great head coach, to fix an issue in the locker room, to fix something on the field, whatever it is. No team runs on full-on autopilot. Coaches will have
to coach. You have to make tough, hard decisions, right, that are going to piss some people off.
Sure, and have to be okay with it.
Yeah, and it's interesting. This is totally unrelated, but somewhat related, I think. I was reading a great story about the Ravens signing Justin Tucker, about how they went about signing. He's an undrafted free agent. Their special team coach, who was a great special team coach, Jerry Rosberg, knew about him, kept it under wraps, tried him out, loved him. But they had Billy Cundiff, remember, who had missed the kick in the AFC Championship. And they brought the kid in. He had this great tryout. But there was this divide in the coaching staff. Keep Cundiff, who was a Pro Bowler but missed this big kick, or sign the kid with the big leg from Texas who went undrafted that no one really knows about. And Harbaugh said, John Harbaugh said, we went around the room, and he said, I want to know everyone's input. And it was really kind of probably 60-40 towards Cundiff. And Harbaugh said, it's great. I appreciate everyone's input. It's really only my decision, so we're taking the kid. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's just a head coach who knew the room, and he'd already won games. The Ravens were already a good team. But it was just an example of a head coach going like, that's great and all, but it's my ass on the line. So I believe in that kid. So when does that crossover? When do you go from like the good assistant coach who, you know,
I think
plays well with your head coach to, nope, it's my decision only, because, you know, I'm the one who's out there every day.
Right. I mean, as soon as your butt hits the fire, that becomes very clear very quickly. Oh, yeah, I'm going to go with whatever I think, because I'm the one whose ass is on the line.
Yeah. And by the way, if you dither at all, if you're not sure which assistant should I trust, which voice should I listen to,
that
you got a GM
down
above you in the entire front office that has their own opinions that are going to come down and say, what the hell are you doing? Why are you guys doing this?
Right.
What, you know, and that manifests itself. They won the division, so there was only a short stretch of that season where you were worried about that because they had the 7-game winless streak. But if it happens that it's a tough October, right? It's a tough schedule. You start out 5-9, 5-10, temperature turns up. How do you handle that?
Yep.
How do you get them back on
track? And again,
I
agree. I think he did a really good job with everything.
Yeah.
With the Barry Trotz is gone and the Stanley Cup and all these big, you know, personalities in the room. I think he did a really good job. And now we'll see where he goes.
Great testing ground for him that first year.
Mm-hmm. And I'd rather have the pressure of, oh man, can I keep up a Stanley Cup than taking over a team that's a dog team.
Dumpster fire.
Right, that you're just going to get fired at some point anyway. All right, two more questions because they're kind of fun questions.
Ooh.
And then we'll get out of here. Austin Bundy, let's take the focus off free agency in the now. Do you think Ovi catches or surpasses Gretzky's goal record? I don't know. I don't know if he can keep it up.
We're gonna end on this one. This is good to go another 45 minutes.
We can go. So I wrote about this today. In a way, I wrote. This is Monday on July 15th. We started our summer series Burning Caps questions. 20 Burning Caps questions. This will take us through next month, the dog days, as you said. And I wrote, can Ovi score 50 next year and this coming year? And I think that goes a long way. If he gets 50 this year, 50 on the nose, he ties Gartner, 708. I think he would be 7th or 8th all time. And then it's 186 to Gretzky, and he's not yet 35. If he has one more big year like that, now I think it's in play.
One
now
more
I,
after the 50? No, or
I think
the 50?
I think one with the 50, because then from 35, I mean, we all, there's a lot that has to happen here. He needs a contract, right? He's only under contract 2 more years. We all get that. But if after this season he's got one more 50 on the resume, 48, 50, what in that range, and you're within 190 or less of Gretzky, and you're not yet 35, then I think it's definitely in play. And I don't know that.
I don't know. I'll never, ever bet against him or doubt him.
Yeah.
Because, again, he's just not made of the same stuff that most humans are made of.
Yeah.
But how much fun would it be if you start getting to, like, that off in the distance where you're like, oh, my God. Imagine he did 50 on the nose and then came back with, like, a 41-goal season.
Yeah, I mean, then you're well into the 700s.
Yeah. Right.
Right?
I mean think about how bananas.
20, 130 away at that point.
If he does 50 on the nose and then has a 40-goal
season. So 140.
Yeah, then you're down to 146, and he'd be heading into his age 36 season. I mean, Jerome Iginla was banging out 20-goal seasons well into
then
his 30s.
Then it's just how long
right?
does he want to play?
Then it's, yeah. Then
well, I think there'll be some incentive if we're within 120, 130. I think
once you get down there, but he does need one more big. He can't at 34. He can't settle into 35 to 40. Ovi, that's going to take that to me is too much. Then you're asking him to play his style of play at 42. I don't know if that's realistic.
Don't you dare question.
I mean, trust me. I put that in the article too. I was like, far be it from me to ever at this point. I mean, he's the greatest goal scorer of his generation.
Again, we're just asking. Go back. Not enough is talked about the lost rookie season because of the lockout
mm-hmm.
and the lost half season because of the stoppage.
When he still had 30 some odd goals.
Yes. Yeah. Could you imagine where we'd be?
So his first season was a...
So conservatively, in my opinion, he is probably missing 70 goals right now. 70 to 80
that's
goals.
Fair. Yeah, that's fair.
Right.
Over a season.
Because he would have been 19 that first year if there's no lockout.
Yeah, so he would have scored.
Well, I mean, he's.
What was his first?
50.
50 his first year?
Or 52. 50?
I think 50.
Yeah. So if,
well,
if
maybe 52.
If he had put up a 50 plus goal season his first year.
And half a season.
Half a season.
Give me 20. Right, 25.
So 70, 75 goals.
By the way, I looked this number up. Fascinated me. So in. He also can try to become the oldest guy to get 50 goals. He can't do that for a little bit. The oldest guy did it at 35 in 1971. Jágr, though, did it. He had a 50-goal season in 05-06. Right?
By the way, how about Jágr?
How about just in general? In life?
The Instagram post, did you
yeah.
see that?
No, yeah, that was great. That was
saying, you're welcome, pretty much. Yeah, my years here were terrible, but if it wasn't for me, they weren't terrible. You wouldn't have gotten Ovi, so you're welcome.
The guy is the best.
So here's my point. All right, so Ovi is at...
658 total.
658. So if you add on...
75. Let's put 75.
He had 52 as a rookie.
So say he had 50 as his real rookie, and 25 in another half season.
Well, so he'd be at 733. So call it 733, 735.
Yeah.
And then you get your 50-goal year. We're talking about this upcoming year. Now you're at 785. Yeah. You're with 110 after this year. It's amazing to think about. It's really sad. When you think, you know, when you really start putting the math to it, you're like, man, that's a real bummer that we lost 72 games. If he comes even sniffs Wayne Gretzky, if we're talking, he hit 700, the place is going to go crazy. We saw that when he hit 600. We saw that when he hit 500. It's an awesome milestone. Can you imagine every time he scores? The game almost would become secondary.
Right.
Every time he would score a goal.
When you get to that level.
When you get to that level, every goal would be outrageous. I mean, just thinking about it from a network perspective, that would mean.
We'd be working round the clock.
Round the clock.
Yeah, I mean, round the clock.
The puck collection would be unbelievable. It would be amazing.
It would be amazing.
And I think all of this conversation starts, that was kind of the point of my story, was that it all starts with this. If he can get 50 this year, he puts himself in position to make a run at that.
Well, but that's also basing it on the eventuality of dipping down to like 30 goal season.
Yeah.
But if he is there a situation where he can go 42, 40, 41, 40. You know what I mean? Like sure. a string of 40 goal seasons rather than going 50, 38, 31.
I think we have to build in the variance here. Because remember, we totally blow this off now because he's had back-to-back 50, or 49 and a 51, right? We had 33 a couple years ago, and he wasn't hurt. So
we will not speak of that season.
Right, but it can fluctuate. He could have a 32-goal season and then back to 42. I mean, I think the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think there's going to have to be people conspiring against him from within to get him to 33 anytime. Like, I
don't know how that happened. I looked back and I was like, hey, wait, that team was awesome. How did he only have 33 goals that year? He played. It's not like he missed 20 games, right? So,
well, his minutes were down that year,
his
right?
Minutes his minutes down. Were way down.
That yeah. was the plan.
That was the plan. Was
sort of.
But that minutes, that's a lot. I mean,
he was down a lot of minutes.
He was playing 17, 18.
Wasn't a great plan.
Right. It was a poor plan with terrible execution.
Well, it didn't work out.
It did not work out, yes. That was.
It did not.
It was pre
33 goals, 2016, 17. Well, you know what? I mean, they came. 16, 17 was.
The only season Penguins, right? In the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 yeah. that he was under 20 minutes a game.
Oh, right. So the other thing, that Jágr year where Jágr is 34, this is a comparable year, 05, 06. First of all, it was coming out of the lockout, right? So penalties called all the time. Jágr went nuts. Didn't even lead the league in goals that year. I think that was, who's the San Jose guy that led the league randomly one year? Jonathan
Chichu,
I think, yeah. had 54. Yeah, or 56.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, randomly out of the lockout, that dude had 56 right. goals. Jágr had 54. 34 years, turned 34 at the back end of that season. So Ovechkin's trying to match. That would be the second oldest. He'd tie Jágr as the second oldest guy to get 50 goals if he does it. But Jágr, like, that you can't compare that era. Five guys scored 50 goals right. that year. Five dudes. Do you know how many have scored 50 goals this decade? This decade, I'm saying since 2010, five dudes have scored 50 goals. Ovechkin, Stamkos, a couple others I'm blanking on. But it's five. I put it in the story. Five dudes total have topped 50
Line
goals.
Line again?
He didn't get it. Get no. it.
No.
And there were a couple. There was a year Crosby led the league with like 43 or something right. like that. Oh, Draisaitl got it last year because he was right. at 50. But five dudes in Jágr's in the year after the lockout, five dudes in the last decade. That shows you, that kind of just puts in perspective what he's doing, because right. you just reeled off four 50-goal seasons this decade from Ovechkin,
yeah.
plus the year he got 49. So this is
I really want it to happen.
I just want it to get close and be fun. Like
down the stretch, like he needs right. six. By the way, if he... Let's say he had 46 with five games to go. I wouldn't bet against him.
Nope.
He would be going nuts, even if they had
and
the
so would
spot.
The team.
And so would everybody.
They're feeding him and feeding him and feeding him. Like, it'll be constant.
Do you remember that year he had 49? And then the yeah. last game, it became comical.
Right.
I think Reardon mentioned it last year in a presser. He was like, yeah, that was a bit much. We're like, guys were just willfully
literally picking
trying
up
to get
the
him,
puck with their hands and like throwing it,
throwing it to him.
Right. What he can do is pass up the open netters to try and get Backstrom a hat trick anymore. You know what I mean? Like, you have to be greedy. Over
yeah.
I know you want TJ Oshie to get his 30th goal. TJ can kick rocks. Get 50.
All right. Austin Bundy also sends in this. We'll end on this because it's not really real. Which duo gets into the Raptors first? Ovi Bakke or Bondra Kolzig? There's no, if you were going to put a duo, there's no.
Ovi Bakke.
Yeah. I mean, Ovi Bakke.
Yeah. I mean,
again,
I've said Bondra and Kolzig deserve to be.
I think they both. Is JJ here? JJ's not here. Good. Okay. No. So we can have this conversation.
JJ
would go off on this. But yes, you put both of those guys up. They'll probably get there first because presumably you're not going to retire Ovechkin or Backstrom for another X number of years. Unless you want to do it while they're playing, which is weird. So I don't think they would do that.
But kind of, I'd be okay with that.
I mean, if they just literally ascended to the Raptors. They just hung those dudes in
guys!
The I wasn't done playing yet.
Symbolism's weird. I would say those two would get up first. But I'm on record as saying that Kolzig and...
I think both should be in there.
And Bondra should be up there. JJ's opinion be damned.
I think goes across the board.
So it's a disclaimer at the top of every podcast.
Right, correct. All right, so that is that's a good dog day of the summer mailbag. Well, we're probably close to an hour here.
I would think so. Hear
that? 50 minutes or so?
50 minutes?
Something along those lines. All right, I'm going back on vacation. I am whooped.
We'll see you later.
Mentally draining.
I wasn't on vacation. Were you on vacation?
I had like a 2.5 day vacation. Yeah. I got to build on
my vacation's at some point. Coming.
Yeah, we'll get there.
I was with in-laws.
You were not on vacation.
I was on a lake. As you said.
I was on a lake.
You were doing a Canadian bit.
Rented a pontoon.
You were in a different place where you didn't have to go to work.
Correct.
But you weren't
and there
exactly.
was a lot of booze. And yes, that is
well,
correct.
You really can't have one without the other. You can't say I was on vacation with in-laws.
Well, my father-in-law, though, is like, my father-in-law is definitely like the 2:30. You want a drink? So like,
oh, I love that.
So, yeah, he's like,
that's how I vacate.
Yeah. Like, he's retired. So he's like, he sent an email. What do you guys want alcohol wise for the trip? So like right off, sent
so
in an
it
order.
It greeted you at the house. You roll in.
Open
the cooler.
Here we go.
Open the fridge. Oh man.
That's
so, the way to do it.
Yeah. Woodford Reserve bottle at his house in Ann Arbor. Bottle at the lake house waiting for me. He's good people. Midwest, man.
You married well. You
really Midwest. Did. They don't lie about it.
My Outer Banks drinking schedule starts at 10 a.m. Oh. Yeah. Straight to beer. Like, there's no Bloody Marys, no mimosas. 10 o'clock, we're opening up the first Bud Light.
Are you a Bloody Mary? I don't like Bloody Marys.
Oh, I hate Bloody Marys.
I don't like tomato juice.
I just said the heartburn.
The heartburn. I just hate Bloody Marys.
So is that just old man thing or just...
No, I've always hated it.
Always, I don't like tomato juice, so I've never been...
That is not a go-to.
Yeah.
I don't like celery and I don't like tomato juice.
No, like...
But you do like alcohol.
I do, yes.
So we're 2-1 here.
But we can get it in other ways.
How do you feel like Old Bay on it?
The White Claws made an appearance when I was at the beach for a couple of days. The White Claw has become a sensation this summer, and it's kind of tilting me a little bit. Do you know what these are?
No, what is
it?
They're kind of like alcoholic seltzers, right? Raspberry and blackberry, lime, all this stuff, and I can't deal with it. Really, I just want a beer.
Right. Well, so the point is, it's like you're drinking, but you're not drinking. And so my wife likes them; she'll drink them.
But then you're like, oh, they're just going down.
The next thing you know, she's on top of the house singing, "I'm a golden god." And then we got a problem.
Perhaps we should work on your final word.
And I don't have a pool, so it's an issue.
Correct. And then look, my father-in-law though, when I said, "Hey, look, I'm simple. I just want Corona with limes." And he wrote back, he's just like, seriously? So like, he did judge me a little bit. I was like, yep, that's it.
The
I'm
Woodford,
sorry.
Though, is great.
The Woodford is great.
That's awesome. I don't do the 10 a.m. I'd be asleep by 2, but I do the 2:30.
It's weird. It was like some sort of dormant chemical thing in my body that, because I'm not a huge drinker. But as soon as I get to the beach, it like turns on. It's like, dude, whatever you want, man. It's
whatever.
Fine. I will drink for literally a week straight. I will never get drunk.
There's no new.
I'll fall asleep at 10 o'clock at night. You know, like I won't stay up, but I will just, it's a good IV. And it's the best. I don't know what it is, but like I'm never questioning it.
We're good. We'll do like happy hour 3 to 7 on the beach and no one leaves. You just, the entire clan is out there. It's great. It's good. When it's time for dinner, then you go in, have dinner. Good.
Well, my father-in-law, it's sort of like the Baltimore thing. It's like shot in a beer. Like you get a little glass of whiskey, you get your beer. And the day begins. So, so it's fun. It was vacation.
Vacation.
The way it should be. All right, we'll come back with more dog day mailbag type podcasts in the future as we streamline in. Again, tomorrow, we're recording this on Monday. Tomorrow is Tyler Lewington Day. It'll be in honor of Tyler Lewington, 78 days.
Gordie Howe hat trick.
That's correct. 78 days as of Tuesday. So for Brian McNally and Ryan Billy, I'm Rob Carlin. We'll talk to you then.